Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Hi, I'm Lauren Sherman, the host of Fashion People. I love fashion, obviously, but shopping for fashion online is kind of annoying. There's endless scrolling, my size is always out of stock, and I can't actually find what I want. No one has really made this work for me. That is until List. Instead of browsing different stores one by one, on List you can see and shop all of the best fashion. List is the secret shopping weapon now used by all my most stylish, cool, and in-the-know friends. Don't shop around. Join 200 million fashion shoppers, including me, on List.com. That's L-Y-S-T. Or download the List app on the App Store today.
Giants winning three titles in 5 years, but they're aware of it. Do the fans put added pressure on the Dodgers knowing that the Dodgers have been better over the past 10 years, but they haven't had the same success as the Giants?
They haven't had to the top of the mount, as they say. They've climbed the big mountain, but they've come up short. And any time rivalry comes together, like it did the opening of the season and then starting this weekend again for three, people bring that up, and especially Giants fans. Okay, you had the upper hand for a while, but we've had the last three World Series between the two teams. And it's true. It was a great streak, Bruce Bochy in that team. And I watched him a lot and admired a lot of the guys. Had a great streak. And the Dodgers have had consistency, winning divisions, the last, 6, 7 years, and getting into the World Series, falling early last year to the Nationals, but coming close in World Series against Houston and the Red Sox. But until you get to the top, until you win a World Series, you haven't accomplished the ultimate goal of a team sport player and team.
Well, when growing up and you have the opportunity to have your dream become reality, was it a particular team you wanted to play for? And did you always look at certain teams and certain rivalries that were always big? And was this one that you always looked at?
Well, then we've talked about my growing up in Tampa, Florida, and Dad driving a bus for Greyhound, and ending up in late spring of '56. Dad had a charter, the Brooklyn Dodgers, playing the New York Yankees exhibition game, and I got a chance to bat boy, and that was the beginning of my dreams and career. But Mom and Dad were from New York, and Mom was a Yankee fan, Dad was a Dodger fan, and they always talked about baseball in New York, and Mom voted a lot because Yankees won a lot. But if you remember, in '55, the Dodgers beat the Yankees for the first time. So I was a bat boy for the world champion Dodgers, and then through the years, obviously, thought about the Dodgers a lot. And then to get drafted in the first round in 1968 by them was a dream come true. And then ultimately, the next 14 and a half years in LA, and then five in San Diego. But to end up with the Dodgers, to be around, and I bat boyed for, seven or eight springs, to listen to him talk about baseball in New York and then L.A., but about the Giants. And I didn't understand a lot when I was 7, 8, 9, 10, but as I got older and I read the sporting news more books, and about Bobby Thompson and that Ralph Frank and those guys, I got a deeper understanding of the history and the feelings of the rivalry and so forth. So it was, it's been pretty neat to have played for the Dodgers and been part of this rivalry and understand that in all of sports, this is pretty close to the top.
No question. I mean, thank you for sharing those moments with us. And when you look at baseball now, there's a huge demographic that they're saying they're aging out. They're in their 50s. Baseball is starting to take a back seat. What is it going to take for you think for baseball to be cool and young and flamboyant again?
Well, being an old guy, a legend, that means you're old, you've been around a long time.
But sure.
You've got to be really careful that you don't try to change the game too much. The charm of the game is it's timeless. There's no clock. It's 27 outs and one more run. There's collisions, you know. There's going to be knockdowns. There's going to be, right. You know, there's going to be plays that are questionable. There's going to be feathers ruffled and so forth. You don't want to tame it down too much and quicken the game too much so that it becomes like everybody else that now has a clock. And it's 2 hours. It's 2 hours and 15 minutes. If you get a four-hour, nine-inning game, so be it. It's great. You get time and a half for your money. You get to enjoy baseball. You get to sit there and relax. And then you get to go home, and the next day is back to real life. But baseball takes you out of you know, the day-in, day-out rigors of life and challenges and so forth. Puts you in the stadium, lets you manage, lets you cheer, lets you have that hot dog. You can go to your apps now. Great. Okay. If it keeps you in the game in the stadium or gets you into the game, so be it. I think it's wonderful. But don't start speeding it up so much that you take away from the inherent charm of why we all love the game. We've all played it at some level.
Dodger great Steve Garvey joining us here on Kozlow and Dibs on 95.7 The Game. Steve, this is the anniversary of Barry Bonds hitting number 756. I would love to get an opinion of a Dodger great about what a Giants great did 13 years ago today, hitting 756th home run. How do you view Bonds in the scope of when he played and what he was able to do as an athlete?
Well, you know, I was, not only did I play for a long time, I was on the field for some great things. And arguably the first one was being in Atlanta for Hank Aaron 715, being on the field that night and seeing him hit that home run, and to see the pandemonium that happened all around that, and to stand back and say to especially myself, knowing history, to be part of that night was special. And then Pete Rose breaking the hit record, and Nolan Ryan 6 home runs, and Reggie Jackson 3 home runs in the World Series game. And then to actually see that night when Barry Bonds broke the record. And you can attack it from many angles, or you can, you know, revel in the accomplishment from many angles. But I've always said you still have to hit the ball. You still have to hit the ball over the fence in this case. You still have to accomplish the most difficult thing in sports. And that he did that was a sign of tremendous consistency. And over a period of, what was it, 3-4 years, he would get maybe two pitches a game to hit, and he would hit them. And the walks and the intentional walks and going out every day takes a toll. So I saw that, you know, I tip my cap to the accomplishment. You can talk about all the other things, like I said, but it's in the record books. It's significant.
And you think about the longevity that it takes to get to that mark, and how baseball now has really embraced the home run with exit velocity and launch angle, and the ball seems to be harder than ever. Do you think we'll see a time when somebody's going to surpass Barry Bonds? And I think particularly about Albert Pujols. Might he be a guy who can hit another 100 home runs or so and become the all-time greatest?
Well, if you have the designated hitter and he keeps himself healthy, and just like you said, the way the ball's flying around, I just saw the Dodgers just completed the air control tower, you know, in the parking lot. A joke, but anyway, if I was right through the flight path, you know, coming to LA,
sure.
I say that because these balls are just—I mean, balls off the end of the bat are going 410, you know, and well-hit balls are going 456, and the home run derby is not what it used to be. It's so doggone boring now, right?
Right.
And you know, I've never felt. I'm too sorry for a pitcher, but on pitches that are pretty good and the ball gets on the bat, and especially if you go the other way or to right field, then you've got a pretty bad chance of giving up another earned run. So,
sure.
You know, obviously, you know, there's a lot of talk about pitcher's velocity, which I think, you know, how can a guy hit 98? Well, if you consistently see 95, 97, 98, you know, major league hitters are going to catch up with it. And, you know, but I just seem to think the way the ball jumps out now, you know, strength of the players, you know, people come up to me and say, yeah, did you have a launch angle? Then I have a long shingle. And I hit it out. I didn't have one. But my, you know, my launch angle was, 15 degrees, right center, left center, you know.
Right.
And when I, you know, and when I missed it, I hit it out. And I think you can ask, because if you watched me, I was a, probably 8 of the 10 biggest hits in my career were for Senator Wright, because I believed in covering the plate. I had a close stance. I was struggling to be able to fight balls off, you know, for doubles down the line. And if I got it up to the sweet spot, I'd hit it out. Because if you go the other way, you know, invariably you create backspin, and that's what carries the balls also. But, I did have a launch angle, to everybody that may be wondering right now. But, my goal every year was 300, 200, 100, you know, 300 at bat, 200 hits, 100 RBIs, 20 plus home runs. And if I did that, I felt that, you know, my teams would be pretty close to, if not postseason, a World Series.
Man, I'll tell you, during the pandemic, when we didn't have any sports, I got roped into watching a lot of the classic games. And here in the Bay Area, they were showing the 74 A's-Dodgers World Series. I was just mesmerized at how quick the game was played, how different the game was played. I believe your teammate Steve Yeager made a heck of a throw in that series to cut a guy down. It was an exciting series to watch. I hope some fans of the game today go back and watch some of those great old World Series that went on. And before we let you go, Steve, I'm a Michigan State guy too, and I want to let everyone know you're a two-sport star. Not only baseball, you're a defensive back on the football team. Is that correct? You play a little football for Duffy Daugherty?
That's right. And where do I send the check for saying it? Two sports star.
You know? Yeah, there you go. Exactly. In fact,
All American third baseman at Michigan State, but I played 2 years for Duffy Daugherty.
That's awesome.
There, and I always thought that it was a big key to my career playing football in college, of course, high school and so forth. And thanks for remembering that. I had four tackles, I think, on O.J. Simpson in the 67
wow.
Michigan State game. So
wow.
I'm surprised he got up, you know, to the huddle.
Nice.
And I don't want to embarrass you, but let everyone know what you did in your first at-bat at Michigan State.
Okay, so real quick, the opposing pitcher walks the first three guys, and it was Eastern Michigan. Their coach goes out, he's talking to him, and he looked like he's saying, you know, just get it over. And my coach, Tom Smith, calls me back. He said, listen, if he's going to get one of them, it's going to be the first one, so just hang in there. But okay, so first pitch over the plate. Where do I go? Right field, into the Red Cedar River for a grand slam. So
wow.
I come back, and I'm all smiles, and Tom Smith's at the top of the dugout. He says, that's great. Take it in. I said, we need to take it in. Where do you go from there? Where are you going to go from a grand slam?
Your
slugging percentage, your OPS. We didn't talk about that thing. But it just off the charts. So I said, one more bat. He said, okay, take a few more. And ended up having a really nice career at Michigan State. And from a guy from Florida going up north like that to a Big Ten school was arguably one of the best decisions of my life, because it was a cultural change in education and different types of sports than the East-West, you know, rabbits down in Florida and so forth. So good decision. Signing with the Dodgers and having to always experience arguably the greatest rivalry in baseball. And I want to thank the Giants fans for booing me and yelling those names at me to inspire me every time at Old Candlestick.
Just so you know, they're still booing on the text line, okay? You're a Dodger, you're a great man, you had a great career and a great life. God, your Giants fans still don't like you.
Same effort.
There you go. Thanks, Steve. We appreciate it. Stay safe, my friend. We'll talk again sometime, okay?
Amen. God bless. Thank you.
Yep. Steve Garvey, boy, that's a lot of fun. That's a lot of fun talking about that.
Oh, it was awesome. Take that for analytics, Steve. How about Steve just hit Steve over the head with analytics, you know, and he's an all-pro. I mean, that dude was unbelievable player.
Hey, listen, I think it's great talking to guys who understood the rivalry like that. I think and he has respect for it. You know, he's not going to come in here, Dibs, you know, throwing high heat and ripping Giants fans and everything. He's going to have respect and reverence for it. But I think it's neat to talk to the guys who've worn the uniform and understand what the rivalry is, because you wonder if you know, and I'm not picking on Mauricio Dubon, but the young guys, are there guys in that clubhouse who, like the Crawfords and the Belts, who are passing that information along saying, hey, this weekend series isn't a typical weekend series. This means something to our fan base differently than when we play the Rockies or the Cubs or the Mets.
I think there's more of that going on this season as far as them passing it on and letting guys know, because you can't feel it. If you're in a normal season and it's Giants-Dodgers and it's August 7th and you know you're at this point in the season, whatever, and you go down there, you're going to feel it. You're going to see the crowd. You're going to hear the cheers. You're going to see Giants fans on the road trying to hold it down for you. And similarly, when you're up here at Oracle Park and the Dodgers come to town and it's 40,000 down there at 3rd and King and Giants fans are giving the Dodgers all they can handle it, and the Dodger fans, the minority of them out there, are hearing it as well, it's easier for the players to ascertain how big the rivalry is. But in a year like this, Jim, I think there is some of that where some of the veterans have got to pull the youngsters aside and say, this may feel like it's just another game, but to our fans, and you made a good point about that, it's the fans really who look at this as a much bigger rivalry probably than the players do.
And I think we see it, you know, I referenced on occasion I'll do some Giants pre and post I have in the past. We'll see it in the ratings. You can sense even those years when the Giants were down or when the Dodgers were down. You know, when the Giants were down, but Madison Bumgarner was on the bump and throwing against Puig, you paid attention. It mattered. Those games were a little bit different than the typical game that was going to happen or a typical start for Madison Bumgarner. And so I do think, Lo, that I think it's good for a fan base. If you're a team that doesn't have a rival, whether it's a natural geographic rival or one that's happened over the span of time because of a conflict that you've had, maybe both teams going for the division, and it's happened for a number of years. If you don't have a natural rival, I think it's kind of sad for the fan base.
Yeah, I do too, and I think that now you see a team, Dibs, that you watch where the Giants are and you watch where L.A. is, you know, are, and you think about, okay, what is this series going to be about today, and what is it going to be for this rivalry that we talk about? This is now, you have, this is kind of that little rubber match. I know they're going to play again this year, but think about it. Both teams got blood. It was 2-2. So they split the series. So I think you're going to even have more Dodger fans and more Giants fans watching this series more so than they watched the last series, Dibs, that they played several weeks ago.
Well, it just depends on how you look at it. Cause right now Giants fans are teetering on the edge of hope here after you were unable to get the split in Colorado. So you're thinking that this is a series that the Dodgers probably need more than the Giants as it pertains to the playoffs, because the Dodgers are in a position where you feel like your team is going to be there at the end. I know that Colorado leads the division and the Giants are sitting already four games out after just 14. The Giants fans, while you want to beat L.A., you're not thinking, okay, if we sweep this series, all of a sudden we're going to be the power players in the West. You want to win the series no matter the circumstance, but I don't think that it's the same springboard as it is for the Dodger fans.
But, yeah, I agree with that. This is the hope series for Giants fans, because you're sitting there thinking, I'm not sure what to think of this team. I know they're trying to determine what they have for the future, but baseball's different this year. 60-game sprint, more teams in the playoffs, means you have an outside shot. And Dibs, let's say the Giants take 2 out of 3 from the Dodgers. Don't you think Giants fan all of a sudden sits up a little straighter and says, we beat the best team of the division, you know? Maybe this analytics crap is going to get us across the finish line, and we're going to see a little baseball in October in a year we absolutely had zero expectation of anything happening for the Giants in October.
And I think that's the sense for all teams, you know, across all of Major League Baseball is, hey, if there's 8 teams in the playoffs, maybe we have a chance. And it doesn't necessarily mean that you've got enough depth in your rotation and a good enough bullpen to make a deep run in October. But like you said, Jim, just the idea of maybe having a postseason game. This is a hope series, and there'll be a lot of hope series for this team and many other teams as you start to poke through what will be one of the oddest seasons of all time.
All right, interesting. Go ahead, Lo.
I was going to say, Dibs, is it a hope season, or do you think yesterday – was that a hope game, or when you were watching the Giants play yesterday until you had that god-awful seventh inning, was it a hope series, or was that a true situation that you said, oh, my God, this team might split with the two best teams, might split with the Dodgers, and may split with Colorado? If you find a way yesterday to get that thing done, are we in a different space just with two splits with two of the better teams in the division?
Well, you're in a different space in that you'd be 7-7 instead of 6-8, but ultimately you are the team that everybody thought that you were going to be, at least the way I look at it. You're 6-8, and we talked about the over-under. We have our little wager, and the number was 25, the over-under, and right now they're trending right about on that same pace right now. They're trending toward being about a 25-win team. So that's right where the experts set the over-under, and that's right where the team is performing. And, yeah, it's an unfortunate way to do it. When Dubon hits the home run, you take the lead, right, and you start to think, hey, you know, we might just get this split. But ultimately, right, when you're in Colorado, you're not of the mindset of, hey, we're up 3-1. Let's cling on to this lead. If you're up 3-1 in Colorado, you got to be thinking about add-on runs, and they were unable to get that done.
You're absolutely right, man. Nothing is safe when you play in Colorado. You're right. Absolutely right. Steven, get the Kapler ready about resilience that the team is showing. Because I think, Lo, that it was a hope game and it was a hope series, because that's the best team record-wise in the division right now. And like you pointed out, they already got the Dodgers, and they got the Dodgers coming up this weekend. They split with the Dodgers when everyone thought they were going to be an embarrassment. They came right back and showed some resilience. If you split in Colorado against the team that has the best record in your division, you do start to think you're not under the realization or under the belief that, hey, we're going to be buyers at the trade deadline. But you know what? We're relevant. And that, I think, is an important thing to have happen. So I'm in agreement with you. That was kind of a hope game. It was kind of a hope series. If I'm a Giants fan, because I could say, well, was the Dodgers series a fluke? Well, wait a minute. Now I played well against the Padres, and they're a really good team in the division. Now I'm playing well against the Rockies. They've got the best record in the division right now. I can build my case of maybe I should be a little more excited about the Giants and what they're doing. Is that fair?
It's fair to me, because I really believe that the Giants, they didn't get the memo that they're a horrible team.
Right.
They didn't get the memo that they're one of some of the worst teams. They didn't get the memo. And Kapler's talking about, if we're going to make a playoff push, that this is some of the things we got to do. So I don't think they believe like we all believe what they are. I think that they have hope. And I don't, even yesterday losing that game, you don't think that they got on that plane or whatever and said, my goodness, we had that. We let that one get away. You don't think that they have some optimism about thinking that they should have got that game yesterday? So I think that you go in now saying, hey, guys, we're up against it. We gotta find a way. So I'm looking forward to seeing this, because I think this series, you get to see the Giants' best. And you also get to see the Dodgers' best, because the Dodgers understand it was a split. But the Giants are in a situation of saying, we need to make a statement. So I think I'm happy for this situation, because you're going to see what both these teams are made of in this series.
Yep, I agree with you on that one. Listen, you can build a case. And again, if you're on that side, you want to build a case to have some layer of hope. You got smoked in two games in L.A. You're resilient. You come back and you get the next two. You play well against the Padres. You play well against the Rockies. You're doing some good things. Gabe Kapler was talking about the resilience that his team has shown so far this year.
I'm pleased with the way they've battled and fought back in games, and also kind of over the course of the season. We've had some tough losses. We've had some losses that didn't look good. And we've come back the next day ready to play baseball, having made adjustments. And so I think the thing that stands out to me is the resilient nature of this club so far. I don't think the moment is too big for this group. Like we've talked about already on this Zoom call, there's quite a few players who are really just getting their first exposure to the major leagues.
Well, that's a big piece to it, too, is that getting an opportunity to be in these circumstances, and that's how you learn. And that's the other thing, Dan, for some of these guys, if they are getting their opportunity to play, they know they don't have as many bullets in the chamber as a lot of these other teams do. You've got to, it's trial by fire. You got to get out there against the best to see what it takes to be at that level, and that's what a lot of these Giants are going through. And when you get incremental victories like that, you can start to become a bigger believer.
And that's what Mauricio Dubon was talking about, Jim, yesterday after the game, how he hasn't been playing every day, and so he's been feeling a little bit of the pressure to go out there and perform, and that explains in part why his reaction was what it was when he hit that home run. He was excited. He hasn't had the opportunity because Farhan Zaidi and Gabe Kapler are using the platoon situation. And, you know, you haven't gone up against a lot of left-handers to where Dubon was going to be in the lineup. And then you check the lineup card low and you find yourself batting ninth and you think, okay, this is where they see me right now. You're not an everyday player. Yaz gets a day off, so you go ahead and play center field. And you know that if you go out there and have an offer, maybe with three punchies, your number may not get called again as quickly. So the pressure of performing and knowing that you're not getting a ton of opportunities, and then to go out there and do it, you can understand why his reaction was so passionate.
Yeah, I can. And I'm under the belief that a hungry dog, always say that, Dibs, a hungry dog hunts best. And I look at this situation where Kapler is saying, okay, I know guys want to get comfortable and know their roles, but we're not good enough. And that's the point that I was trying to make yesterday. And we're just sitting talking about, because you know things are changing, because you know that there's no set in that set order, if these guys have the gravitas that he feels comfortable of saying, these are my everyday players, he's going to keep guys on that short lease, and he's going to keep guys in the moment. So he's going to make sure that the pressure's on these guys and see who can deliver in those heat moments. You know, people make their best, you know, you make best music when you're under pressure, you know. So how is this team under pressure? What are these individuals going to do? He's trying to see what kind of men that he has, that you know, how they respond in tough times. So I think Cap is getting to know who they are, and they're getting to know how Cap runs his system as well.
You know, we got into some of this conversation when we started talking about rivalries, Giants and Dodgers, and they get at it tonight. And we were just kicking around some great rivalries in Bay Area history. And again, it's generational, right? Today's 49er fan really dislikes the Seattle Seahawks. That's their number one rival. Older 49er fan, longtime 49er fan, couple of adamant texts. Still hate the Cowboys, will always hate the Cowboys. Others, it's the Packers. We really hate the Packers. And we go back to Brett Favre. We really hate them. We always think, oh, it's a 49er Seahawk, it's Giants Dodger. What about the rivals that are right here in the Bay? Would you say Giants A's is a semblance of rivalry for ownership of fandom in the Bay Area? And Dibs, you're the perfect example of this. Marin guy, now East Bay guy. Is there a Giants A's rivalry at all?
Yes, absolutely. And it doesn't always come to fruition on the field, although it's fun that the Bay Bridge series, and I know that there's some cockamamie trophy that was created to
easy,
commemorate it.
Easy, easy.
No, it's cockamamie and it's contrived, and you know it, Jim, and you're just afraid to admit it because
Ahmed Fareed and Brody Brazil went to the state government to get a chunk of the Bay Bridge, but go ahead. Yet I digest.
Yes, you're pandering to your employer, and I understand that, and so I will allow you to continue to laud this trophy that was created unnecessarily. But I digest. This is a rivalry, not only because of the proximity and because of this cockamamie trophy that your two former associates have created, but what you talked about, and that's the quest for the Bay Area baseball dollar. And as the A's continue to creep toward eventually getting a resolution of a stadium, if they ever do get an actual baseball stadium that is on par with AT&T, knee, SBC, knee, Pac Bell Park, knee, Oracle, then we'll really see what the rivalry is like. Because, Jim, you know this, and I don't think you were in town back in the mid to late 80s, but the A's would draw darn near 3 million fans. And the Giants would get about 750,000 for a season at Candlestick. So there was a time here when the A's were the dominant property, and that can happen again if they eventually settle the various lawsuits and finally build at Howard Terminal.
That's when I moved here. It was 89 through 92. I was living in the Bay Area, started in the East Bay, moved to the city, and I know exactly what you're talking about. I remember one night with my buddies I was living in the city at the time, driving over to the Coliseum because Dave Stewart was starting for the A's. Roger Clemens, all right, was in George's box.
Goodness
and he was
gracious.
Starting. He was starting that night. And that I remember driving over and the place was packed, Dibs. And you're absolutely right. The A's owned the market at the time. The A's were the team. In fact, a lot of us thought at the time the Giants were going to leave the market and it would be a one-team town, and that team was going to be the Oakland Athletics.
Yeah, it's remarkable how things changed, and for a variety of reasons,
yeah.
Mount Davis being among them. But you know, the A's, I think, if they had a downtown stadium, and again, I don't think it would be as big as Oracle Park from a capacity standpoint, but it would certainly help them to become much more relevant again. And you look, Jim, back in, what, 1991, the A's drew 2.7. 1990, they drew 2.9 million fans. And then you skip ahead to, you know, just last year where the A's didn't draw nearly as much. They didn't even crest. They had 1.6 million. So just not like it used to be there.
No, no, it's not. And it's unfortunate. And we hope that they get their building done. And we hope that they maintain a relevance in the Bay Area. Boy, you'd hate to see the pandemic, which is killing a lot of business, hurt the A's process of making their ballpark happen and have someone in come in and swoop in and buy the club. I'm not saying that there's any conversation that's going to happen, but you can see scenarios where if you can't get the ballpark, you can't compete playing at the Coliseum all the time, for crying out loud. You got to get yourself a new home, and that's one thing that they've got to do. So there is a Giants-A's rivalry. How about at the was there ever a 49er-Raider rivalry? Was it certainly wasn't as big. But was there a 49er-Raider dislike? I mean, I know that it got so ugly. Remember, the last time they played in the preseason, there was a lot of you know, a lot of bad things that happened in the parking lot, bad things happened in the stands. That was a preseason game. And
I think more fan than player on that particular rival, right, Dibbs? That it's more of the fan rival than the players. Players' rival, like you said, is, you know, when you're talking about the Chargers and the Raiders, player rival. Player rivals, different things like Dallas, and you're talking about Dallas and the Niners. But I don't know if it's the Raiders and the Niners football club. I think it's more the fan, Dibbs.
Yeah, I couldn't agree with you more. It's absolutely the fans, and I think that to Giants and A's is more the fans than it is the players. You could say that, though, about all these rivalries. And, you know, Steve Garvey, who joined us earlier, talked about, you know, the rivalry when he was a player. But, again, it was the fans on the Dodgers and then the Dodgers fans on the Giants, and it was the Giants fans on Tommy Lasorda. You didn't often see player versus player, but it was more heated then, Lo, because nowadays players change teams so much more often in all these sports,
right.
You know. Think about what we talked about with this Giants-Dodgers, Jim. It's Madison Bumgarner and Yasiel Puig, and neither one of whom is currently with the team. And, you know, Bumgarner obviously was the big lightning rod of recent vintage in this rivalry. But in general, you don't see a lot of the team versus team, player versus player, quote, hatred. Like if you think back to Larry Bird and Dr. J, those two guys, they didn't like each other. Nowadays, you could say, what, LeBron James and Draymond Green, a great example. Those two guys are boys.
Yeah.
Those guys are friends. And even though LeBron teabagged him and Draymond popped him in the biscuits and he got suspended. Think about that, though, Lo. Think about even in your day, you know. It's like there was more animosity. And this Giants team, they're a group of nice fellers. There's no hatred.
No, you're absolutely right. And then, but I thought that the times changed, and I think the two guys, Coz, that changed it and made it okay to be rivals, but it's okay to like one another, is with Berg and Magic. The Magic and Berg, that was a tough rival. Those guys would go at it. The media tried to portray the black, white, and all how they tried to do the different things, and it was one of the most watched rivalries that go on. But these two, they had a kindred love for one another, and even on the court, they would be competitive, go at it. But Dibs, I thought that it was they start to make it okay to be and to enjoy your rival, but enjoy that individual. Hate the rivalry, I get it. We hate going against the team, but as far as being friends off the court,
that's good. That's a great great pull. That might have been the first time where we actually saw, especially superstars of that ilk. And maybe it's the cynic in me though, but to me the thing that's changed that sentiment more than anything is just money, as you like to say, Lo, because now what's to get mad at? I mean, if you're Evan Longoria and you're making $21 million a year, and yeah, you're on the Giants, are you really going to hate a guy on the Los Angeles Dodgers? I mean, you're doing okay. Life is pretty good for all these guys. So I don't know. It's not to say that guys don't want to win, because they do. Competitive people, the competitive nature and all that. But are you really going to keep yourself up at night getting angry over somebody who happens to wear the uniform of another team? I think these rivalries, Jim, are always more fan-generated than they are by the players or the teams themselves.
You know, it's interesting. I'm looking at the Chilton Auto Body text line at 888-957-9570. Excellent text from the 707 regarding the Giants and the A's. The trophy is awesome. Know your role, Dibs. Thank you, 707. We appreciate you understanding the greatness of Brody Brazil and Ahmed Farid, who are able to procure the Bay Bridge trophy and a chunk of the Bay Bridge, probably one that just falls off naturally. I don't even think they had to go up and solder one off. What do? You'd you get the not solder. What's the opposite of solder? You get the guy with the blowtorch. You blowtorch a piece of the thing off. That's what they probably had to do to put the trophy together. So thank you very much for understanding,
Jim,
how awesome it was.
Just one follow-up before you pivot. Actually, two follow-ups. Who currently has the trophy, and what's the historical back and forth of this award?
The historical? I don't understand.
Who has the trophy right now?
I don't know, because we have to Google it.
This is such a big deal that you don't know off the top of your head who holds this coveted trophy. Who won the first one? Who's won it more? These are things that matter when you talk about real trophies and real awards. So I apologize.
The importance of the trophy. The importance of the trophy, though, is the team that wins the season series.
Who won last year's season series? And if it's even, the team
that wins the last game gets it. Right?
I'm asking you, Jimmy. Who has it?
And Jim, you don't know. It might be over at the offices.
I'll be honest, Jim.
It might be in the offices at NBC.
I'm going to throw the towel in, Jim.
Currently, paperweight on Brody Brazil's desk is what it is. If I asked you who currently holds the axe, you would know that it's the California Golden Bears who upset Stanford, and they got the axe back for the first time in a decade. You know why you know that, Jim? Because it matters.
I'm not sure it does.
It matters more than this ridiculous piece of concrete.
We don't even know. Listen, we lost track last year of the big game. We didn't even realize it was going to happen last year. There was no big Bay Area, you know, love in. Oh, Stanford Cal, here they come. We're going to get, you know, a packed house. It's not what it used to be. Although, would you put that on the Mount Rushmore of rivalries in the Bay Area? Cal Stanford?
Jim, I'm sorry. I had to stop it. I had to stop the fight. It was a 10-8 round, and I had to throw the towel in.
Standing eight count.
Dibs, you cuffed him up pretty bad right there. But he's right, Jim, and you know that.
The Giants have it, by the way. I know that they do.
Thank you, Texas, from the 415.
Why'd you guys save him? Why'd you guys save him right there?
Thank you, TexLife. Thank you. Thank you to the billions. That is awesome of you to stand up for me. Thank you.
Yeah, and it really, Jim, what comes down to is the only thing that matters, which is chips. And the A's can boast. They got the four chips, and the Giants have the three chips. I remember the old T-shirt that A's fans used to wear, four World Series titles, zero splash hits. They were kind of mocking the Giants in their cute little ballpark.
Yep.
When the Giants built AT&T or Pac Bell, they were thrilled with the park, and the A's would come back with, well, we got the four titles. You can have your splash hits. We got four crowns. The fact that the Giants got three, A's fans a little threatened by that, but still, they got that 4-3 edge. So you can keep your hunk of concrete. All love to Double B's and my good friend Ahmed Farid, but the only thing that matters is the chip.
All right, we're going to get into some NFL when we continue. I got one late baseball take I'll give you as well, because it would be so A's for something to happen this year. We'll get to that when we continue. The Power Hour has come and gone. Thanks so much for being a part of it. That's what's coming up next on the game. It's brought to you by It's Just Lunch. It's Just Lunch. Really cool way to meet somebody. Kozlow and Dibs, 95.7 The Game.
Now back to Kozlow and Dibs on 95.7 The Game.
All right, let's keep things moving here. 95.7 The Game. Hope you're enjoying the start to your weekend. It is Friday. If you're going into work, thanks so much for making 95.7 The Game a part of your day. Bonte, Steiny, and Guru coming up at the 10 o'clock hour. That's when they'll get rolling. We still have some time to go here on Kozlow and Dibs. Jim Cozumore, Dan Dibley, Lorenzo Neal with you. We'll finish up. We'll clean up a little baseball, get into some football. 49ers camp up and running. You got Bosa. You got Williams. You have got more than a renewed hope. You've got a team that gets to the Super Bowl, gets 7 minutes away from lifting the Vince Lombardi, and they add some pieces. Now, again, they subtracted some in DeForest Buckner, but they add some pieces, and you wonder if, in fact, they're going to be able to get back to the top of the Big Rock Candy Mountain. It ain't easy to get there. All you got to do is ask Lowe. I mean, the guy plays 17 years in the NFL, and it just is hard to get that chip. But the Niners are locked and loaded, and they're hoping to get back there this year and make it all the way. I want to close things up on the baseball real quick, though. And we had mentioned the A's and how things are rolling. And it would be so A's for this to happen. And they're having a great start to the year. They've won six in a row. They've had a couple of walk-off grand slams this year. They've been a lot of fun. But wouldn't this be so A's to have them make the playoffs, have a great playoff run, eventually get to the World Series, win the World Series, but you can't have any fans, there will be no parade, there will be no jubilation, and it'll be a 60-game season, and lo, fans or baseball people will say, nah, they won the World Series, but it was an asterisk year, it was the pandemic year, there were 60 games, this wasn't a real baseball year. It would be so A's for them to finally get it right, but to get it right in the wrong year, that I think a lot of people would undercut them, even if they won the whole thing.
Well, I think with whoever wins this thing this year, it's going to be undercut. I think that without a doubt, it's going to be an asterisk because of the fact that it's just a shortened season. Yeah, but do you win the title? Yes. But I think that we always talking about, hey, look, bad teams, look at the Giants. They're still in the thick of things. So I think that no matter what team, I don't think it's just going to be the A's if they were to win it. But any team that win it, Dan, this year would still, people would look at it and say, well, it's really not a true measure because the season was shortened in such a great length.
I think that ultimately the champion will still be recognized as a champ more so than if somebody were to hit 400, for example, or, you know, be somebody who leads the league in home runs. It's like, yeah, you led the league in home runs, but you only had 14. That, to me, is going to be much more of an asterisk-laden thing than looking back on this. And the World Series champ will be a team that still navigates the playoffs, and even though there won't be fans in the stands, you're still going to have to win a best-of-seven against the best team from the other league. So I think the champion itself won't be laden with the asterisk as much as an individual mark might be.
But how disappointing. You know, you don't have any fans. You won't have the great celebration and jubilation. You won't be able to, when you win the, game seven or whatever it is, it would just be so A's to finally, after all those years of expectations, they were right there. They had the lead in Kansas City. They were supposed to get past the wild card game and make their run. It didn't happen. How many times have they made the playoffs? They just haven't been able to get over the hump. They ran into the Yankees far too many times in the playoffs. And if this was the year where they put it together, I just think it would be, unfortunately, so A's because we couldn't get together. Yeah, Dan, would you or would you not be at a celebration, some type of parade, if the A's won it? Typically, you would be there, right?
Absolutely, but not in this current situation, unfortunately.
No. No.
You had me thinking about the last time the A's won the World Series and how odd that was, 1989, yeah, with the earthquake. And, you know, I remember people at the time maybe not wanting to use the full asterisk with it, but Giants fans were saying, hey, this isn't really that fair, quote-unquote, because the A's were able to come back with Dave Stewart in Game 3, friend of the program. You know, Stu goes out in Game 1 and dominates. Game 2, the A's win as well in Oakland. Series shifts to San Francisco, and, of course, the quake hits, and I think it was 9 or 10 days off before they resumed the World Series, and the A's came back with Dave Stewart, and they ended up sweeping the Giants, so that would be kind of an odd closing of the circle if the A's were to win the World Series in a pandemic year after the last time they won it was in an earthquake season.
Lo, I think I'm heading to Vegas, baby. I'm going to put some money down to the A's. This has to be their year. Whenever something weird happens, it's the A's year. That's what I'm doing.
Hey, go do it.
Lay some money down.
Lay it down. Lay me a little scrap on that, and we win. We can have the big party. So me and Dibs, we'll have open hands. We'll share. You can share with us. But go lay it down, Coz, and hopefully they'll win this thing.
Let's shift over to the NFL, guys, because NFL training camps are going on. It's a weird scenario now, but NFL training camps are going on. And the 49ers, they had Lynch and Shanahan meeting with the media through the Zoom calls. And now on a regular basis, you're getting a different player. We had Garoppolo meet the media the other day. Nick Bosa and Trent Williams spoke yesterday. And Nick Bosa said, and he had a great year. Listen, defensive rookie of the year. You can say that this guy's going to be a defensive player of the year very soon. He's that type of a terror on the field. We'll have to wait and see what the loss of DeForest Buckner means to the pass rush and how defenses now scheme against Nick Bosa. But everyone would agree this guy's got a high ceiling and he's got a high motor and he's going to go get it. Well, he was talking to the media about preparation, what he did, his game planning. Here's what Nick Bosa had to say. Steven, give me give me what Bosa had to say about the offseason workouts.
I got some pretty concrete things that I've been focusing on. One is just having a better plan going into games. And last year, I didn't really know what was going to work and what wasn't and what was my go-to and what was. So, I mean, just coming into games with a better plan and not wasting any time out there, because you only get so many opportunities, and you want to get those big numbers and help your team as best you can and get the ball out. You have to come in with a plan and not waste any rushes. So that's one big thing. And then just working my hands more consistently. I win a lot at the top of my rush, but a lot of the times I get washed by the quarterback or I don't close enough space and finish the play. So that's probably been the biggest emphasis for me. And I've been working that in walkthroughs and in drills all season. A couple new moves that I might add. Those are the main things, really.
Yeah, those are the main things, huh? That's what you're doing, kid? 9 sacks last year, Low, and he comes out of the box with, I'm going to work on having a plan. You know, last year I was just kind of letting it rip. Come on, man, you played at the highest level. That guy was a monster last year, and if he said he didn't have a plan, imagine what he can do when he gets a plan and gets an idea of what it's like to play at the NFL level.
Yeah, and just because you have a plan doesn't necessarily going to make you get more sacks. I think the plan, what it does, and I think what Nikki was saying, is like, hey, 1, 2, 3, the ground belongs to me. 3, 4, 5, I got to stop at the fifth step and say, okay, now I got to retract. And what he was saying is at times he would get washed by because he was beating the guy and he would give the soft shoulder and the guy would just push him and wash him by. The quarterback was able to step up. He's saying once I get to that one level, I got to have a plan. Once I get to that one level, I got to stop now, and now I got to constrict the pocket. That means I got to take my guy now, put my foot in the ground and get in and go east and west, not north and south, because I don't want to keep going south because I'm going to go past it. So I need to stop at that point. Now I got to dip my shoulder and I got to go into him. So he's talking about having a plan when he gets to certain situations, saying, hey, when he lines up, hey, I line up. I'm like, okay, it's third and this. I think that this is pass. I'm going for it. And understand at least having a plan. At times when you play football, you just go out and you react. You're young. You just come in the league. It's about pinning your ears back and going to get the quarterback. You're losing contain. You're just coming unglued. You just want to get there. He's saying, now I want to have a concentrated, I want to have an effective, concentrated plan when I go into a games, knowing what these guys are doing. I'm going to stay with these particular moves because it's going to work against these guys if I trust my process and trust my plan. Love what young Nicky's saying. I love what he was saying in that I'm speaking to the media. It's about the focus. It's attention to details. It's the small things. Love what he's saying there.
Low, you know, all these guys played football their whole lives. Most of them were superstars at whatever level they were at, whether it was you're playing youth football, high school football, college football. They're all stars on some level. How different is the jump from college to the pros, and how long can it take a guy to really understand the speed and the idea of having a plan at the NFL level where you can't just rely on, well, I'm going to pin my ears back because I've always been able to pin my ears back and beat whoever's in front of me?
Yeah, you know what? It depends on the individual. And you hear Nikki, what he's saying, some individuals, it takes a while. Sometimes first-round guys, you think, man, this guy is going to be a bust because he's not playing as well as you anticipated. But Nikki comes from a good bloodline. He has a brother in Joey that helped him out a lot. So he already knew some of the nuances of the game heading forward. His dad played, so it's a good bloodline. And he had some good teachers to make sure that he's going to be ready. So now it's about fine detail. And it's about fine-tuning yourself. So, yes, there's a lot of guys that step into the league and say, man, they're going to be a superstar, but they don't know what it takes to be a superstar. Not only does he know what it takes, but now he's willing to put in the small little details for his second year to take him over and even make him a more superior player. So you love to hear your young talent, especially when he's a young superstar already, Dibs, say these things because you know that he wants to get better.
You can't rest on your laurels, certainly after one season, but you see some players, young players in the league, and they don't make that improvement, not only incremental improvement, but any improvement at all. I'm thinking about Dante Pettis, and he had a nice little splashy first year, and since right. then he hasn't gotten any better, and this is not to pick on the kid. You look at Solomon Thomas, a guy who was overdrafted, and he struggled with some off-the-field tragedies, and now you're starting to see some improvements. Eric Armstead is a player who has improved over the course of his career. So to go where Nick Bosa started, Jim is right. I mean, I called it last year, Jim. I thought he was a defensive player of the year candidate, not only rookie of the year for defensive, but overall, and of course he didn't win the award, but he was at least in the conversation. To be that good already but still be pushing to get better, that says a lot about the young man.
You know, it's usually safe to say that for most teams, the face of the franchise is the quarterback. Even in Tampa Bay, where Tom Brady goes his entire career in New Orleans, goes to Tampa Bay, face of the franchise, face of the league. Face of the franchise in Seattle is Russell Wilson. Usually it's the quarterback. For the Niners, one of the storylines for me is, Dibs, the two faces of the team are a tight end and a defensive end. Wouldn't you say those are the two new faces of the team right now? Or is Richard Sherman one of those faces of the team?
Yes, it's Richard Sherman is still right there. And the quarterback, Jimmy Garoppolo, I mean, how could you forget the dreamy brown eyes and the
he is dreamy. There's
solid
no question.
Chin, Jim. Yeah,
he is dreamy. But I don't think of him as the face of the team for some reason. Pretty face. Very pretty face. But just not the face of the team. To me, George Kittle is the face of that offense. He's the face of the emotion of that team. It's not Jimmy G. That's me. Lo?
Yeah, I think that usually you're right that it could be the quarterback, but I think if you look at, if I said, hey, Tennessee, you would say the face is Derrick Henry. If you know, if you look at a team like Denver, you would say the face, you know, outside Von Miller. You talk about line defense. If I ask you talking about, you know, even though it's supposed to be the face, but still, let's be honest, who's the face in Houston? You know, it's J.J. Watt. If you go through the league, and yes, it should be at times everyone wants to predicate it on the quarterback, but, you know, you start thinking about the faces of the different leagues that we're talking about. I know right now, Saquon Barkley, look at the Giants, you know. So you go through, you look at, you know, you start looking at certain teams and you think, oh, wow, I thought this thing was the quarterback. So I understand what you're saying, Coz, but unless you're kind of an elite quarterback, the Russell Wilson, the Tom Brady, the Drew Brees, a la some of those guys, you look at certain faces of teams. I mean, even when you look at a guy, team like Minnesota, is Kurt really the face of that team? So I look at a lot of these different places, and it can be debated. It can be debated who's the face, but usually, like you're alluding to, it usually should, and by people want it to be the quarterback, but not all senses that it's the quarterback.
You know, one of the things I'm going to be intrigued at, because this is such a different year, is the fact, Lo, that there are no exhibition games. Now, in the recent history, recent past, teams weren't playing their stars, but maybe a half of the four games. And last year, it came to a head where a number of teams who didn't even play their starters throughout the preseason said, you know what, we're going to kind of rethink that. We might have to get these guys some actual game reps. We know we don't want to get anyone hurt, but you have to be playing in a game speed scenario that is different than practice in order to be ready for week one. We saw the first game of the year last year, Bears-Packers, was one of the most hideous games played of the season because neither team played any of their regulars at all in the preseason. And I know some teams were deciding this year was going to be different. Well, unbeknownst to anyone, this year is different. There will be no exhibition games. How much do you think it could hurt the level of play early in the year where a team like the 49ers might not have a wide margin for error because Seattle's so good. Arizona's on the way up. The Rams were just a win away from being in the playoffs as well. The division is going to be so difficult that with no chance to have iron sharpening iron, low, where's the concern level of that could hurt the 49ers not having time to get actual game reps against another team because of the pandemic, or it just changes the way you're prepared for the season?
It changes. You're right, Coz, because you don't get four preseason games, get to see which young rookie may have a chance to make the team. I think now you're going to make the team at practice. I think that people are going to be able to see what these guys are able to do at practice. And I think the teams like the San Francisco 49ers, Dibs, teams like the Baltimore Ravens, teams like the Tennessee Titans, in my opinion, and that's why I think that you're talking about a guy like Raheem Mostert may get those totes. I think early off, it's about the teams that play physical. So I think a Baltimore team, a Tennessee team, those teams that know how to run the ball and they're physical, and they're going to practice that type of behavior, I think that they're going to have most of the advantage early, and then the passing game usually takes a little time to catch up. So I like the physical nature of the Niners, how they're running dominant type of team, and especially the way Kittle blocks and the way that they get people out on the edges and do the dink and dunk. I like physical teams, and that's why I think that Baltimore, Tennessee, and I think the Niners will still fare well, even though they don't have a preseason.
It's going to come down to the strength and conditioning and the training staffs of these teams, Lo, because one...
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.